ain't never missed my cue.
Wrestling fans, you greasy motherfuckers, welcome in. Well, come on in. Welcome on in to Rope Break Episode 6, a pro wrestling podcast. I am your host, The Greg Flynn. This is live on twitch.tv/wetmeatwrestling right now. Right now, it's 12:30 p.m. Eastern, 9:30 a.m. Pacific, and I am live on twitch.tv. And if you're listening to this in the future later, just know that every Tuesday at 12:30 p.m. Eastern, 9:30 a.m. Pacific, I am live. And if you do miss that or you only see some of it, then you can go into the future where this podcast is available on Spotify and Apple and YouTube, the video version, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for being here. Thank you for saddling up for the ride. I've been reading Game of Thrones. And what's his name? Khal Drogo? I don't know. I'm reading it. I don't know how to pronounce it. I haven't seen this show. And he's on his epic ride across the lands with his princess Daenerys. And that'll be us today. That'll be us today. You can be, I'll tell you what, you guys, the greasy listeners of Rope Break, you guys can be the beefy, sexy Khal Drogo riding across. And I can be the beautiful princess that you mount. Anyway, moving on. Hey, there was a lot of great wrestling this past week. Before I get into it, though, last week I did mention that my goal for today was to do predictions on the podcast. And I have a lot of predictions I want to do, short-term, long-term. But I didn't get a chance to kind of put a little bow around that in a variety of ways because I got sick this past week or this weekend. I've been sick as a tick. I've been battling a virus or some shit, some cold-like symptoms. It's been shitty. So I didn't get to do as much as I had hoped to on a few different, just in life. That's what happens when you get sick. You just don't get to do as much as you want to do in life. But we're making today work. I did watch everything over the past 7 days since our last episode, and I'm opinionated as fuck about all of it. Trust me. So we're going to break down a few matches, a few of the big matches from AEW and WWE this past week, a little bit of a look ahead, and then we'll take a break. And after the break, I want to use one of the matches in particular that we're going to talk about as an example on how I would fix AEW. I have it. I have the formula. I have the solution that they've been looking for. Every week I come on this show and I say they don't understand how to present a wrestling promotion. They know how to present some wrestlers, but they don't know how to present a wrestling show or a wrestling promotion. They're missing the total package, the back end that ties it all together. And I'm going to explain what I think they need to do to get over that hump and create a tighter vision for tighter, more interesting storytelling. And I think that the first match I want to talk about today is a nice little segue into this. And this is, in some ways, they did a lot right here. This was Christian Cage versus Bryan Danielson. It's the first one I want to talk about from AEW Collision over the weekend on Saturday night for the TNT Championship. Christian Cage came in as the reigning champion. He's had a few noteworthy title defenses now. I guess most noteworthy was against Darby Allin at WrestleDream, but now he's got another feather in his cap. He's defeated Bryan Danielson in what I thought was a really good match between the two. I think these are two of the best wrestlers in the world right now, and I think they're two of the best wrestlers in AEW quite easily. I'll just say they're both kind of a little bit on the back end of their careers, and I think it does show at times in terms of what they're doing from a work perspective when they're working out there. But in terms of structuring a match, and you know, that's kind of harsh. Like, Bryan Danielson is so fucking good in the ring. But regardless, I thought that was great. I thought it was, and I thought what made it great was that the match was packaged as a story and like a key story piece throughout the course of the show. So if you watch the show, the beginning of the show, they hype up the match and they bring in Edge and they bring in Ricky Starks and Big Bill. And I got opinions about Big Bill and Ricky Starks. They stick out to me, but I don't know. In some ways it's good and in some ways it's bad. But regardless, they do stick out to me right now. But with regard to Christian Cage and Bryan Danielson, I thought that that beginning build was interesting because it was a good way to kind of get everybody involved. Like FTR's coming out, Ricky Starks and Big Bill's coming out. And it's like, okay, these are the faces of the show I'm watching. And man, that's really, that's like a teaser for what I think the solution to AEW's booking problems is. Is that we got to have a tight vision on like, who's even on this show? We don't know who the characters are. And we don't know how they all feel about each other. But this match got stories like that over. And it kind of mixed up who's involved in what and got that over. Because the ending, of course, Ricky Starks runs out, hits whoever. I don't even remember. Oh, I'm blanking. I'm sorry. I've been sick. A lot of cold medication, a.k.a. THC, yesterday. But anyway, it helps with the headache. But anyway, Ricky Starks comes out and he hits Bryan Danielson, there it is, on the head with the belt, hides from the referee because the whole setup of the match was limiting outside interference. Neither side was allowed to have any outside interference. Both people are in sort of heel groups or heel factions. Both the babyface, Bryan Danielson, is in a heel faction that likes to interfere all the fucking time. Of course, Christian Cage is like the most like over heel in wrestling right now. I mean, MJF is a babyface. Obviously, you have Roman Reigns, but you know, I was talking about Christian Cage with my wife when we were watching this match and just talking about how much he's killing it. And what he's doing that's so interesting, I think, is that a lot of the heels in AEW, they like being liked. They like being cheered. I mean, you get it. I mean, that's kind of what MJF is coming out and saying. And I know that that can be a work or whatever. But the heels get cheered so much, especially in AEW, that they kind of start existing in this weird tweener place. Swerve Strickland is kind of a good example of how excited everyone is for him. And I don't think that's a product of the way they package the character all the time. I think it's a product of the way they package the entire show. There's not context for a heel. So if a heel is doing great work, great interesting work, we're just attracted to that and we're drawn to that. And so without an overarching structure or build to the show, there's nothing like bad about it. We're rooting for this guy and everybody cheats and our world champion cheats on our behalf. And so, you know, it's all 3D and complex, I guess. It's AEW, but I don't know. In my opinion, it's a drawback. But to come back to these two guys, Christian Cage is the one who's doing it right. Christian Cage is the one who is genuinely unlikable in a genuinely interesting way. Like, and the big gimmick that really he's been running with is just shitting on everyone who has daddy issues, which, who doesn't have daddy issues? And then there's Christian Cage out there with looking amazing, looking fit, looking like a little bit older. He's in his 40s or however old he is now, with a lot of daddy energy and a lot of douchebag energy and swirling it together and saying, oh, do you want me to be your daddy? It's so good. It's so good. And it's like, it just stabs you in this place where it's like, oh, my daddy issues, right? And you just watch it and you're interested and it is funny. He's doing it in a funny way and you kind of laugh, but you kind of don't. It kind of still stings. Maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm just exposing my own daddy issues. I don't know. But I think, in honesty, it's a testament to how good he's doing. When he comes out and his Jumbotron entry package says, worked everyone. You know, I'm pointing that out to my wife. I'm like, look at this shit. Like, it's so good. It's thematic and it's on point. And there's just the right amount of fourth wall breaking going on with him to kind of temper some of those daddy issues and daddy words, I suppose. but not a ton of it. And, you know, he's saying the things that he's saying, and he's saying them with a sense of humor, but with a sense of douchebaggery. And he's so good at it. So it's why I'm so all about Christian Cage. And interestingly enough, and this is just kind of a side note that's popping into my head, he has one of the biggest contracts in AEW right now. When he was signed and brought in, he feuded with Kenny Omega at the beginning. And it was a little underwhelming. It was during Kenny Omega's belt collector phase. Christian Cage came in, and I believe he won the Impact World Championship off of Kenny Omega. And it was kind of one of the first losses Kenny took during that run. And then Kenny won the AEW World Championship match a few weeks later. And then it felt like Christian did what everyone does in AEW, which is like completely stall out and get kind of uninvolved and get kind of just milquetoast. I don't know what else to call it. Kind of blah, kind of mushy, kind of in and out. And then when he turned heel is when I think he really found his footing in AEW. And to come back to that contract I brought up, I mean, how many people in AEW have been worth their big contracts? We're always hearing about, and you can go look it up. It's like everyone from WWE who comes over to AEW, it's like, what were they paying in WWE? Well, double it. Just whatever it was, double it. Miro, double it. Edge, double it. Like, it does it. Christian Cage, double it. And how many of these guys have been worth it? Like, how many of these guys are really, you know, are you getting juice off that squeeze? Christian Cage, you're getting the juice from right now. He's been worth every penny. He's one of the only ones who has been worth every penny. And after the break, later in the show, I'm going to talk about kind of that big picture and how to get more juice and a better squeeze off of all this. And staying on AEW, though, we're going to move forward to Ricky Starks and Big Bill. I wrote them down in my notes, and I wanted to talk about them real quickly as tag team champions. It's just so interesting to me that they did that with the Young Bucks winning that number one contender match, because it seemed like we were all lined up for Bucks FTR, and it seems like that's what maybe they wanted. It seems like Cash is nursing a Cash Wheeler of FTR. He's nursing a injury right now. And maybe that's why they've dropped the belts, and we'll see where this all goes. Maybe the Bucks are going to win it off of Big Bill and Ricky Starks. Maybe Starks and Bill are going to get over again and cement something here in the tag division. We'll find out. It is interesting. It is exciting. And Ricky Starks is awesome. And Big Bill is kind of an interesting compliment to him because, you know, Ricky Starks has sex symbol energy. I'm young, I'm good looking, I'm absolute Ricky Starks. I look better in this turtleneck and this blazer than anyone you've ever seen. And oh, by the way, I hit a nasty spear. And I love it. I love Ricky Starks. I think he's great. And Big Bill is like a good compliment contrast to him because, you know, I don't think Big Bill's great on the mic. I think Big Bill isn't necessarily great in the ring. It seems like he can do a few things with that kind of monster big guy energy. But I don't think he's a phenomenal worker who's going to have an amazing singles run at any point or anything like that. And I'll say about Big Bill, the thing that always got me about him early in his, when they were trying to get him involved in AEW, he didn't feel like a big monster who would totally kick your ass. He's huge. He's totally cut. He always looked like a model. He always looked like he thought, and maybe this is just like, maybe this is just the buy in me. I don't know. I don't know how else to view it, but like, he always looked sexier than he did mean. Coming out with the jeans and the greased up abs and the long hair, but then not, it never felt like doing a lot. Doing a lot in the ring, doing a lot out of the ring, and never felt like he was doing anything. Now they found something. Partner him with Ricky Starks, who also has sex symbol energy, right? And put the tag belts on them, and let Ricky do all the talking. It's a good setup. It's a good start. And I'll be honest, I don't know that I liked it at first, but now that we're a couple weeks in and we're seeing a little bit of this unfold, I'm starting to like it a little bit. So we'll see where this goes. It's AEW and I like it, which means they're going to fuck it up. They're going to have the Bucks beat Big Bill and Ricky Starks and just have a 2-year long Bucks tag team reign, probably. No, I don't think that's going to, I don't know. We'll see. We'll find out. What matters is, and this is kind of what I'm always watching for. What matters is I'm interested, because that's what this whole thing's about, really, in a certain way. How do you make it interesting? Well, I'm interested. So AEW Collision on Saturday night, a couple of good matches that interested me. A lot of filler matches that didn't, but that's okay. That's okay. I'm going to give them the solution to figure that out later. But first, I'm going to talk about a few WWE matches before we get to the break. The first WWE match I want to talk about was the Tag Team Championship. The Judgment Day reclaiming those tag titles from Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso, which means we got one of our early answers that I've been asking about Jey Uso. Which is functionally, what the fuck is he doing in the tag team division being Cody Rhodes' brother? He's already been in the tag team division being Jimmy Uso's brother. Now he's Cody Rhodes' brother in the tag team division, the tag titles. And it was only for a week, and they drop him to the same people they want him from. So maybe this was just a give and take to create a little content, to create a few interesting matches, and maybe we'll spin off or spiral off from here. I don't know. I don't know why Cody and Jay need to feud in an ongoing way necessarily for those tag belts. I don't know who else they feud with. I don't know what else you do. With Roman Reigns on SmackDown, it was great to see Cody and Roman Reigns face-to-face again on Friday night. That was so cool. And that's one of the things that WWE does well, is put people face-to-face to give you that little teaser, but not tell you ahead of time where we're going all the way. Oh, gosh, I cannot stand when AEW does that. And here's an amazing example. Let's get into the part where I shit on AEW. Here we are, the part of the show where I shit on AEW. You have Jay White come out and challenge MJF for the world title. And they book it. And they book it for a pay-per-view. So now it's Jay White versus MJF at Full Gear November 18th. And then after that, we start booking Jay White for singles matches. Now, if I have any smart mark tendencies at all, I'm going to immediately know or suspect that Jay White is going to win all of his singles matches now. And I might have already suspected that he's new to the company. He's a big name from Japan, etc., etc. But that's kind of the point, is if there's already some of those vibes and some of that energy, you're just eliminating the sense of a buildup and just announcing that this stuff is kind of filler. Filler in the context of the story. Jay White and Penta can have a great match together, and that can be fun to watch on the show. Why build it this way? I understand you guys sell tickets too, but you know, if you look at WWE, LA Knight. So we had Cody Rhodes. This is the comparison. Cody Rhodes gets face-to-face with Roman Reigns. LA Knight also got face-to-face with Roman Reigns on Friday Night SmackDown. And what do? They immediately book a match with LA Knight versus Solo Sikoa. And because of the way AEW is booked, because of the way WWE is booked, forgive me, I'm hopping around, I've been sick. Well, it's going to be a bumpy ride at times here with Khal Drogo and your princess, but we'll get there. But because of the way WWE is booked, I didn't necessarily know that LA Knight was going to beat Solo Sikoa. There were other possible outcomes to that match. There were other stories that could possibly be told. However, I feel like I know exactly what's going to happen in these Jay White singles matches when you've already announced that he's on the level of MJF. He's on the level of the devil. It's already a thing. So if he comes out and he loses to Penta, and I forget who they had him fight on Wednesday night, but if he's losing these matches, well, I mean, obviously he's not going to, because it's going to totally undercut the tickets for the big pay-per-view and the build and the sense that he could even win that match. And so, you know, I know I'm getting into the weeds on all this, but I just wonder if there are smarter ways to capture interest and build this sort of ramping up to your payoff that you're going to have at Full Gear, at least in terms of this Jay White MJF thing. Are there better ways to ramp up your challenger? I mean, I get it. You got to sell tickets. But, you know, you announce your AEW and WWE, they're announcing pay-per-views and selling tickets for them without talking about the card all the time. And maybe you can even just say something like MJF will defend the championship November 18th at Full Gear. Who will it be against? Maybe you get three guys kind of on the level of Jay White, kind of on that main event level, all sort of announce their interest. And then they have a couple of separate stories that then emerge. Okay, this is the one. Jay White's the guy. And that's the thing. I don't see a bunch of people in Los Angeles like, oh, we got to see Jay White in that fucking main event. Like, they're excited that it's him. He's great if they know about him. If they know about him, they know he's good. He's good on the mic. He's good in the ring. I like Jay White. This isn't a criticism of Jay White. It's just a criticism of the way they build. It's a criticism of the way they ramp. Okay, your princess is wandering because a lot of this stuff I wanted to talk about after the break. The next match to talk about from WWE is the tag championship. Cody Rhodes, I said, losing the, and Jey Uso, they lose the belts to Judgment Day. The other side of this, I will say, as I was watching this, even if this is just sort of filler and okay, they're trading the titles back and forth a few times here and then we're going to move on to other things, or maybe we're not, who knows. That's the thing, it doesn't matter. You know, Judgment Day is going to be in the mix. They're in the mix every single week, and they're great in that mix every single week. On my eFed, if you've never watched, we have a band of heels that is just affectionately called the Evil Alliance. And you know that your baby faces are by and large going to be feuding with the Evil Alliance. And there is like a structure to the Evil Alliance. We have a few guys who are low-key jobbers. And then we have other wrestlers of the Evil Alliance that become world champion. There's a little bit of a hierarchy there. So it can feud with a variety of people. And that's exactly what Judgment Day is doing. Judgment Day is the Evil Alliance of WWE. Every single week, you have interesting, visually appealing, visually interesting. We have this mega powerhouse of a woman who is charismatic and hot and powerful all at once in Rhea Ripley. I was watching her last night. She had a match. Actually, I was watching her this morning, too. A match against Shayna Baszler, listening to her talk. I mean, these guys are just carrying the show, Judgment Day. Raw and SmackDown, they are carrying the WWE. You hear their music, and they come out multiple times per show. And you're just like, here they come. Like, maybe it's not the most exciting moment of the show. It's not The Rock. But, like, they're the ones carrying it, and it's interesting, and it's good. And it's Rhea Ripley at the helm of that. And I wanted to say something on the pod that just stuck out to me, which is that I remember a little while ago, and I don't know if people still feel this way or whatever, but a lot of people want to compare Rhea Ripley to China. Now, I watched both. Like, I watched China in her prime, and that was like the prime of wrestling for me. I was 10 years old. The Monday Night Wars were heated up to a max. And DX, the response to NWO, DX, China, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, all those guys. Badass Billy Gunn. Goddamn, those were good days. But the point I'm trying to make here with Rhea Ripley and China and the comparison, China was amazing. China was powerful. China was interesting. And we love China. We miss China. So I don't want to speak ill necessarily. But from a professional wrestling standpoint, China's not qualified to carry Rhea Ripley's bags to the stadium. Rhea Ripley is on a whole other level from what they could do with China. They couldn't do the things with China that they can do with Rhea Ripley. With China, it was just about the power. It was just about the strength. And where do you go with that? I don't know. Have her fight the men. So they had her fight the men. They had her win the Intercontinental Championship. And it was weird. And the men didn't really love it. Like, a few of them were willing to do it. Whatever. It was weird. It stuck out. And she couldn't talk. You know, there were things about her and her personality that didn't work in that context on a personal level. Whereas Rhea Ripley seems born to perform. And I think they're managing her and kind of that strength side of her so much better. And this is why I feel this way. Whenever you see Judgment Day come out and like gang up on somebody, you know, blindside them with a steel chair. Yeah, we're the Judgment Day. We fuck with people. That energy emerges. Rhea Ripley doesn't stick out. Rhea Ripley looks like she belongs there. She looks like she could be the ringleader of the crew, and I would buy that. You know, I believe everything that they and she are selling me on that. But at the same time, I don't think they're going to throw her into matches with men. And I'm not clamoring for that. She just looks strong enough to fit in the context of their wrestling show, in the context of their wrestling promotion. What novel idea, have a context for all that. And so when it comes time for the Judgment Day to exact a little revenge on some punk-ass bitches, Rhea Ripley looks amazing. She doesn't stick out at all. She doesn't look like, oh, there's the woman, and we need to get another woman to feud with her. No, she can trade a few bumps with a man in moments like that, and it's fine. It just seems fine. It doesn't seem like that big of a deal. That's why she's on a whole other level. That's why she can take this thing further in women's wrestling, man, than maybe anyone has. And it's so interesting. Last week on the show, I talk about Toni Storm and Io Sky being next in women's wrestling. It's sort of like, I mean, what's the comparison? You're talking about some really good all-stars without mentioning that, oh, by the way, you know, there's a LeBron James out there. If that makes sense. There's a LeBron James of women's wrestling slowly emerging. And there's a couple other superstars. There's Kevin Durant out there as well. There's a couple other superstars. There's Steph Curry. And that's Toni Storm and Io Sky in this context. And LeBron is Rhea Ripley. And I think that she has a foundation to do more in women's wrestling than anyone ever has. She has the power and the impact and the in-ring ability of a Charlotte Flair. Okay, but she's interesting on the mic in a way a Charlotte Flair isn't, to just be totally honest. I think Charlotte's okay on the mic. I don't want to, you know, be mean. But, man, Rhea Ripley is just phenomenal. She's leading that faction functionally. She's carrying the WWE in the most interesting faction in it right now. Just on a whole other level. Just on a whole other level. And so it's awesome. Mad props to Judgment Day. I have nothing but good things to say about them. And so them winning those tag belts back, that part of it makes sense. Cody and Jay picking them up just to lose them again doesn't as much. You know, I don't know. I don't know if that's just about making everybody look strong and creating a few matches. I don't know. The last match to talk about from WWE before we fix everything wrong with AEW. And it's connected. There's a reason that this is the last match we talk about before we get to that topic. This match is the Intercontinental Championship between Gunther, the Ring General. I'm not very good at that. The Ring General Gunther. I'll blame the cold. Next week I'll hit it better. The Ring General Gunther against Bronson Reed. And the reason I love this match so much, I mean, first off, was the in-ring work. Gunther seems incapable of having a bad or uninteresting match. Like, he's just going to have great matches. And he understands how to contextualize them. So this whole match is, like, suddenly built around, excuse me, let me take a moment to burp a little here. This whole match is built around, can Gunther land the powerbomb? Can Gunther pick up Bronson Reed? He attempts it early. He's unable to. And then these two fucking warrior monsters plow into each other for a while, back and forth, totally selling me on the impact of everything they do. And then Gunther lands that powerbomb, and it was fucking awesome. And what made this so good is that in the back of my mind, it was totally possible that Bronson Reed wins this match. Bronson Reed doesn't win anything. Bronson Reed doesn't win anything. Bronson Reed is on the show to lose. He's enhancement talent, functionally, if you've ever heard the term. He is there to get other guys over, at least during this stretch of his career and this current run that he's on. That is what he is doing. And yet the way that WWE packages those guys, the way that WWE has packaged Bronson Reed, I have this sneaking little suspicion or wondering the whole time in the back of my mind. Yeah, he lost those last 5 or 10 big ones, but who knows? Who knows? Because they can flip the switch at any time. They believe in their talent and what they're doing. Oh, I have a million points to make on this topic about Bronson Reed and enhancement talent, because that is functionally the solution to AEW's woes. So here's what we're going to do, you greasy wrestling fans. We're going to take a quick 5-minute break, or like a 5-second break if you're watching in the future, and then we're going to come back and talk about how enhancement talent is the solution to all of AEW's problems. This has been Rope Break, a pro wrestling podcast. We'll be back in just a moment. I ain't never missed my cue. Holy shit, that timing, wrestling fans. I just sat down from doing cold symptom things. That's all I'll say. But that was a perfectly timed break. Welcome back, Rope Break listeners. Of course, available everywhere and live Tuesdays, 12:30 p.m. Eastern, 9:30 a.m. Pacific on twitch.tv/webmeatwrestling. And hey, don't forget to go to webmeatwrestling.com. Find out about the eFed. We have some huge eFed shows coming up soon. October 20th, that's this Friday. At 7 p.m. Eastern, we have Friday Fright Night with some huge matches booked for that. I was actually working on that this morning. And then, of course, October 29th, that's a Sunday, we have Lucha de los Muertos, the big WMW pay-per-view. Yes, our pay-per-views are free. Come check out WMW Lucha de los Muertos, October 29th. Mark those agenda books, you greasy wrestling fans. But back on topic, we have a major task ahead of us. Man, a huge task ahead of us. A task that some of the richest wrestling minds in the world, aka Tony Khan, have not been able to solve. And that task is really just making AEW an interesting show, to be totally blunt. Because what I wrote in my notes was how to fix AEW. Well, what's broken? What's broken, and I say this a lot, and I'm going to provide a really, really good solution for you in the form of Bronson Reed. But what's broken is the back end. What's broken is the sense of a show. What's broken is the sense of hierarchy. Who's better than who? What is happening here? Who are the players? Who are the big names? Who are the side pieces? Right? Dominique Mysterio is literally carrying the show. But if he's in a match against almost anyone else from the Raw or SmackDown roster, I expect him to lose. However, there is a way that he can win with the help of the Judgment Day or otherwise. Whenever his moment to get a big singles win or whatever comes, it'll come, theoretically. Or it won't. Maybe he'll flame out. I don't know. Different people are different. But that's kind of what I'm getting at, is the enhancement talent, the Bronson Reeds, the Dominique Mysterios. You have to package your enhancement talent, and you have to sell me on them being capable of winning their matches. And that means a variety of things. That means there needs to be creative behind them. You need to sell me on their personality. You need to sell me on the story of how they got on the show and why they deserve to be here, why they deserve these opportunities. Get across a sense of competence. Get across a sense of charisma. Get across a gimmick, a character, something, and make them mean something. I was watching Samoa Joe beat somebody I had never seen in my life on Collision Saturday night, And that's fine. There's a place for that. But it feels like AEW is afraid of having anyone who they pay a salary to lose a match. Like, I don't know how else to word this. You know, Christian Cage versus Bryan Danielson, we talked about that match at the beginning of the show. And one of the first things I thought when I saw that match booked was, this would have been more interesting 6 months ago. Now, there's issues to that. Christian Cage wasn't where he was at 6 months ago in terms of being over as this heel character, et cetera, et cetera. He wasn't the TNT champion. However, from the standpoint of, like, booking interesting singles matches, that can always be interesting. Two good wrestlers fighting each other can always be interesting. And if AEW doesn't even have a back end, if they don't have an ongoing creative, if they don't have that sense of hierarchy and who's ahead of who and in what's happening, you're just losing everything, man. And it's why I always belabor the point that they had made about having wins and losses and standings matter, that they were going to show what your win-loss record was when you came down the ramp for your next match. 2023 record, singles record, 10 wins, 4 losses, whatever it is, right? And, you know, if you're doing things like that, you have a context for having Jay White, like I was saying earlier, and two other people, Bryan Danielson and Christian Cage, off the top of my head, all throw their hats into the ring for the world championship in that match against MJF on November 18th. And then through standings and record and competitive merit, we have somebody emerge. And then the story is that they're good at combat sports, as opposed to the story always being he was able to get under MJF's skin and MJF accepted the match. And the Bucks were able to get under FTR's skin and FTR accepted the match. They never go the route of merit on the show. They never go the route of this person wins matches and deserves the title shot. It's like they don't realize that while they're winning the matches and building that side of it, they can get over as many memes and jokes and entertaining bits and songs and dances and whatever the fuck goofy things they want to do. They can do it during that run. They don't have to announce and christen somebody as the guy who's already got the match, and now he's going to have a singles run after we've announced that. It's literally the same thing. It's the same vibe. It's the same energy as announcing that the standings and win-loss matter. And then, you know, 6 months later, just not mentioning that ever a fucking again. Enhancement talent is the solution to all of this. Paying people a salary to look great on television and then lose matches. That's your solution. And what ends up happening sometimes, if you bring in quality enhancement talent, they get over. And suddenly they're popular. And suddenly LA Knight is the biggest fucking thing in the world. I'm not saying LA Knight was enhancement talent, but he was just in the mix. Losing a lot of matches in the mix. And suddenly everyone is like, this guy is funny and interesting. And now, because he's on the fucking show, like he's a character on the show, it's easy to flip that switch. It's easy to give him a few big wins, have him challenge for a title, give him a few extra promos now. Boom! We got a fucking megastar on our hands. The right guy was in the right place at the right time. It's almost like AEW is afraid of that. I don't know what's going on. They got no Bronson Reed. They got no, which means they got no foundation to create an LA Knight. It's like they got to do so much with, and they being wrestlers, and they being whoever is writing the creative, have to do so much with so little opportunity and time. This is a product of a bloated roster. This is a product of seemingly nobody being willing to lose, or whoever's booking these matches being too big of a pussy to have wrestlers lose matches for a while A lot of them. This is the thing. In WWE or in New Japan Pro Wrestling, and really anywhere else in the world, Jungle Boy just loses matches for years. Darby Allin just loses matches. Dominic Mysterio is losing matches. Your Young Lions, which I love that term. That's a New Japan Pro Wrestling term. Your Young Lions just lose for a while. And every now and then, one of them doesn't. Shinsuke Nakamura, if you're familiar, WWE, wins the IWGP Championship in Japan at the age of 23 or whatever it was. That was out of left fucking field if you're like a New Japan Pro Wrestling fan and historian and you understand how they do things. And now we wait a few years before we ever think about doing that again. And we find the right person and we put them in the right situation. But outside of that, the Young Lions lose. And they lose to simple things in Japan, like the Boston Crab or whatever. What do they call the Boston Crab? A Boston Crab in Tokyo? I don't know. But regardless, that's what they're doing. There is enhancement talent. And there is a place for enhancement talent. But with AEW, the problem and the trap with their enhancement talent might simply be the fact that they have crowned all of their Young Lions as the four pillars. Our young talent is all Shinsuke Nakamura at 23 years old. Our young wrestlers are all generationally transcendent. No, they're not. Have you fucking watched Jungle Boy Jack Perry on the mic? No, they're not. Daniel Garcia? No, they're not. They're good. They're really good. They're interesting. Package them. Teach them. Mentor them. Have them fight each other. Have them fight the big boys and lose. Have them get over in sneaky spots. Like, there's a way to do this. But with AEW, we crowned all the young wrestlers, and then we paid $2 million a year salaries to all the wrestlers coming over to retire from WWE, or who couldn't even get a spot on WWE. Let's overpay them and bring them in. Well, is fucking Miro at $2 million a year going to want to come in as functionally enhancement talent? He wants his big bruiser guy to win matches. And at that salary, okay. And then AEW debuts everyone the same way, which means here's your big salary, and you're going to come in with what we like to call feel-good energy, which means you're just going to be you, and everyone's going to be really happy about it. Adam Copeland, just come be you. Just come be you and figure out your own thing, and everyone's going to love you. CM Punk, I remember when CM Punk first came in, it was just feel-good energy. And it was like, okay, well, what's going to happen? And then it was like 3 months later, he even said, wow, this hasn't changed much. It's still fun, but hasn't changed much. And I thought that comment was so telling. It was like the first sign that there wasn't direction, the kind of direction that he would have liked or he would have appreciated. He was still getting off on the fact that they could sell out arenas who were willing to chant his name for a while. I think I could get off on that as well. Tony, if you're just looking for, you know, good-looking 6'6" broad-shoulder guys who can talk on the mic, I'm here. I'm ready to make six figures and have people chant my name, too. I'm sure it feels great to Adam Copeland right now to hear the Adam chants week after week. What if Adam Copeland came in and lost a bunch of matches over and over and fucking over? What if he was willing to do that? What if Miro was willing to do that? What if you had a real conversation with these guys when you brought them in about how to make money in show business through professional wrestling? And that's what we're trying to do here. Create a Bronson Reed. Create enhancement talent. Create LA Knight. Have a roster. Have a clear roster of who's going to be on the show. So that the guys who are losing more matches can flip switches. And then you can make kind of meaningless singles wins have impact. If the guy I like to rag on all the time, Jungle Boy or Daniel Garcia, when they have just book a match against Bryan Danielson and have them win. Book a match against Christian Cage that isn't for the title or whatever and have them win. in sneaky spots, so that way we're still interested, and so that way we're slowly putting these little feathers in their caps, so that way when the big title match comes, it's not a foregone conclusion that the jobber's going to do the job. Maybe the jobber will win this one. Who knows? Whereas in AEW, it's like, well, here's the thing. Action Andretti beat Chris Jericho like a year ago, and you guys still think anything can happen because of that, right? No. No, I know exactly who's going to win like 95% of these matches, which is making these matches less interesting to watch. Like, that's part of the storytelling that they're trying to win, and that journey to attempt to get over on the other one. That is what wrestling is. Like, quit telegraphing, you know, and this is what I'll close on. There's kind of this smart mark energy of, like, caring about wins and losses isn't what it's about. It's about enjoying the process and enjoying the match. But it's really hard to enjoy a movie if it's been spoiled. If one of you motherfuckers leave a comment about the ending of Game of Thrones, I'm be pissed. Probably still going to be able to enjoy it. That's a really good book. But I'm be pissed. Don't telegraph this shit. Have a set of expectations for this shit. And then in interesting spots, subvert the expectations. Kill the protagonist. Subvert the expectations when we don't expect it. Tell us how you like to turn right. And turn right at these different spots. And this is how a right turn works. And we like to do right. Oh, all of a sudden we're going left. And the way you do that, I think, is with, the short answer is with enhancement talent. Wins and losses is another way of evaluating. You have to have a people willing to lose and willing to lose with regularity and willing to have that and have creative and booking and long-term storytelling where you're thinking 5-10 years out. Where are we going to be in 5+ years with Daniel Garcia? Where are we going to be in 5+ years with MJF? And I'm sure they asked that question, but man, I just, we're not giving these guys enough TV time. That's the thing about enhancement talent. You're not there to just show up and lose. You're there to show up every week and work. Every single week on the show. Bronson Reed's going to be on the show. And since he can talk a little. He's interesting. He's got the accent. And he's impactful. He's the perfect example of like major TV level enhancement talent. And that's what AEW's missing. Big time. And it's literally what I build in the eFed. You know, we have that big show. I was talking about Friday Fright Night. This Friday, I have built enhancement talent, right? Like we on the show, some of our matches actually aren't predetermined. If you're interested in learning how that all works, come check out the show. Some of our matches are predetermined. And we build the enhancement talent up for that moment so that you won't know. Like, that's the whole fucking point. And then you'll be interested when it happens. So if you want to watch an interesting show, come to the WMW Fright Night this Friday and come to Lucha de los Muertos October 29th. If you want to hear interesting opinions on pro wrestling, that's every Tuesday, 12:30 p.m. Eastern, 9:30 a.m. Pacific. We go live. Also, just see the live feed at wetmeatwrestling.com. And then we end up on Spotify. We end up on YouTube, Apple, and, of course, the video version on youtube.com/wetmeatwrestling, which also has chapters when I'm not, you know, lazy or sick. I think last show I forgot to put in the chapters. Hey, this has been a lot of fun, my son in the skies, Khal Drogo. It's been an honor to be your princess this morning here on Rope Break. I hope you greasy wrestling fans have a great rest of your day. We'll see you Friday, and we'll see you 1 week from today on Rope Break. Bye! I ain't never missed my cue. Never, ever, ever missed my cue.